Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Graham, and welcome to the Sonic Home Companion. Thank you very much for coming back and joining me. I've got another hour or so of information and discussion on things relevant to Masons on this, the 14th day of April, 2013, or 6013 AL. 104th day of the year. We are, of course, getting ready for the incredible celebrations that are coming up around the world for summer solstice. Unpleasant secret of most faiths, the simple scientific and spiritual need for light and enlightenment. And I'm going to pick up, thank you very much for the very generous response to last week's program on ethics. I think we can see the value, and we'll talk in masonry, we'll talk about that in a little while. And if I hadn't mentioned it again, I want to come back and talk to you about the upcoming events in Masonic education. And your part in that, and the part that it plays in Masonic order, but also, I think some changes that we can all bring to the way we go about our thinking towards the future of Freemasonry. Again, we have not nearly scratched the surface with the work of morals and dogma. We're stripping away some of the myth and nonsense that often goes along with Freemasonry and history. We are also, I think, going to get into following up on Walter Leslie Wilmhurst's book. At least to look at it in enough detail that Freemasonry and the education of Freemasonry is not left to sound bites. I think that's happened perhaps a little too often for anybody to care to admit. I don't see how we can exactly learn very much if it is in sound bites, unless it's a consistent sound bite. If you said that the sound bites of our learning are like the notes in a symphony, then I can certainly agree. But I think you and I are talking about here little bursts of information, disconnected, that don't pull together into a coherent understanding of a particular topic. We can't really go into anything in any depth. Now, I want to only speak with you in the privacy of your thoughts. If you have headphones on, it'll be the privacy of your mind, and hopefully I can stimulate the contemplative side of your mind and your being. You'll sit back and relax and if you're like a lot of people and download this in the evening, grab a glass of your favorite Kool-Aid and sit back. And see if together we can make sense out of the imponderables and come to an understanding that life is what we make of it, and it's released for this Mason. We're not facing challenges, then we're just not doing it right. So, of course, that said, always fitting to, I think, add a bit of quotes to help stimulate our thinking. Calvin Coolidge said, it is accordance with our determination to refrain from aggravation. There you go. I don't know if I'm making or making much sense of it. Success is dangerous. One begins to copy oneself, and to copy oneself is more dangerous. Okay. I think we've... sometimes I look at these like the little notes that are describing, the flavors of a glass of scotch. It is caramel with just a shading of chocolate and a hint of elderberry, but only from the south side of the riverbank at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There is no one who does not exaggerate. In conversation, men are encumbered with personality and talk too much. That's Ralph Waldo Emerson. He notices things. I greet you at the beginning of a great career, which must have had a long foreground somewhere for such a start. There we go. The Frenchman invented the ruffle, he said. The Englishman added the shirt. The civility of no race can be perfect whilst another race is degraded. I'm not about to continue the show without going through the outline for this program. And of course, this one was focusing on windows, doors, and other sources of learning. If you've heard any of the talks delivered on ancient charges, you'll hear more recently that I talk about the portals, the windows and doors of that Freemasonry is. It allows us to look into the past, look into laboratories and libraries and imaginations of men that have come before us. I was grateful for your advice about the development of character. I've always have been. We seem to have agreed that the craft has drifted away from one of our balance points, spiritualism, promoting social and financial aspects of Masonic function as elements of success has been the way that we've done that. And if we've done this, then it's been subtle and it's been gradual. It's happened over the centuries, and probably and rightfully so, because when we're talking about something metaphysical, it is a very challenging for it challenges us to develop a capacity or a skill set that we perhaps didn't know we had. And at first blush, I will hear the echo of, I just don't understand. And if that's what it takes to stop you, the limits of your own initial understanding, then how in the world do you expect to progress through the and make advantage of the pool of insight that on which Freemasonry floats? We sit in this basin of the Creator's hand, in this pool of wisdom, and you and I may not care to think that the depths are very pleasant because it's so deep it looks dark and it's daunting. But surely you realize that you're not on this this vessel alone. You're with us, and we can, and some of us have put our dipper into that pool and begun the journey before you. And there were, from the beginning of time, people were attempting this and looking at what came out and trying to make sense of it, trying to make it coherent. And for some, it became quite abstract. And for others, their minds were quite concrete, deliberate, and practical. But the effort has always been to understand the human nature, and by doing that, our own nature, so that we can appreciate more deeply the connectiveness of everybody. The cabal, well, certainly, the cabal amongst us would certainly be able to, if we sat at their knee, give us some direction. If we've done this, how would we know? How would we, and what would the problem be if we've, as so many writers are saying, we've drifted? Well, the problem is we are beginning to know and understand and study the essence of Freemasonry, the root, the principles. And it's a reasonable question to ask, where is this? If this was there at the start, why isn't it happening? Or where is it? Where is the expression of spiritualism, spirituality? And I won't get into parsing out with you the distinction and difference. I'm using it in a really global sense, so I'll throw all those terms together right now. But it's a reasonable question to ask, where is it? And particularly when we have that ongoing question, like, well, what's going on in Freemasonry? And, you know, I don't like the using sort of, for me, it's fake language. You know, whence come we? Like, just tell me, you know, if the question is, where the hell are we going? I can understand that. Whence come we? Or it's like when somebody says, my good lady. Oh, man. Why didn't you just send my well-educated wife running to the door? You know, there's a good way of doing it. It's like giving her an intellectual stick. I know, no, I don't mean no offense to anybody that's into that, but I mean, my goodness. Anyway, I digress as I tend to. If you were to greet us, here, help me, brethren. You are the center of the order. You are the center of the Masonic world, temporarily. I anoint you with all of the power I don't have. If you were to grade us on a Masonic report card, what grade would you give us? Now, I've offered my own. How about the first of these three, brotherly love, relief, and truth? So on the scale of A, B, C, and D, okay? A, B, C, and D. D being, you know, what it is. A being a good thing. What would you give us? I gave us a B, and I cited, you know, the whining, the embarrassing peaks and quarrels. It's like, oh, God, man, you know. After the age where I learned to shave and tie a proper Windsor knot, it's like I also had this sense that doing that made people look stupid. As we get older, we make ourselves look like what my young daughter refers to as old fools. There's nothing new. She's not saying anything anybody doesn't know. When we do that, it's like the 65, 70-year-olds that are out with their, you know, waving their canes in road rage. Like, jeez, you know, stop it. It's just ridiculous. We shouldn't even be having this kind of conversation in a Masonic order. Peaks and quarrels. And the lamentations of our Grand Masters over the years about this, that they have to deal with this. I think I've spoken perhaps too kindly and too gently about the need for a little different structure to ensure that those peaks and quarrels are handled at the proper level. That's not something that the head of our organization can resolve. That's something that is resolved within the character of two or whoever. These people that have the tolerance to embarrass themselves. Why should our order be distracted by somebody else's tolerance? This is a noble order, and we need to be able to treat it as such. And this nonsense that we bring, that being on the level means that everything at the top comes down to the lowest level. Where in the world did this come from? At any kind of that, the level is suck it up, man up, step up to the top, to the highest level. That's the level of achievement. Join me on the level, not the lowest level. That's the opportunity that Freemasonry is offering us. Step up. Oh, gee. I'm sorry. I apologize to those of you who are languishing. Yeah, okay. We're going in different directions already. I hope not. Stay with me. Stay with me. What grade did you give us? Mark it down. Yeah. The next area, of course, is relief. And I gave us a B on that area. Our buildings, chance. It's like they're a bit of a mess, eh? Some of them are just phenomenal. They're monuments to ongoing effort. Little things, it's like, you know, the little details, the thoughtfulness that went into the design and the maintenance. They're beautiful. They're beautiful. Again, it's not to fault the entire range, but there's too much variability. It's like the talent that we have coming up for elected office. Some of it is just stunningly brilliant. The talent is phenomenal. There's a district deputy out there named Byrne. It is just a pleasure to listen to the man. Just a pleasure. He is so thoughtful. He does not carry on as if he likes the sound of his own voice. Sorry, no offense to any of you out there that do that, but all of you in the audience have met these fellows far too often. This fellow is a thoughtful, sensitive man. He does not talk unless he has a bring something to contribute. And his talks are stunning. The old boy sitting around me looked at me and said, yeah, and every one of them is like this. Just a pleasure. Just a pleasure. So what do you give us for relief? I give us a B. Some of the buildings, the Oculus over in, you know, the buildings over in Ingersoll, and, you know, it's just a phenomenal Tillsonburg. These are just beautiful. Anyway, but the other end of it, they're just in decay and disrepair. So as an image, even if we were a franchise, we would hope that, you know, that all of our operation looks similarly. So you're getting the same experience in a small town in the rural area as you are in a large city. Scaled, of course, scaled proportionately, but the same level. The same level of respect and dignity, that's us. That's not a Grand Lodge edict. That's us. And look at what we've created. Some of us are expressing that by the decline, we just either don't care or we don't notice. It's not that important. Well, it affects the overall image. So this isn't about me, us, us. It's about the whole show. So that's why I am. They can be fixed, yeah, of course. But, you know, that's another story. Now, the last part, that's another topic. Again, the truth, brotherly love, relief, and truth. So far, we're cruising along with Bs. And this is where I give us a C minus. I would be lying to you if I said that I had ever heard the topic of ethics discussed, or the topic of morality discussed, or the topic of character development. I'm not going to blow my own horn. I do bring these things up, but it's not for me to. This isn't about aggrandizing what few neurons are firing through my brain. That, I think, is where we drop off. And I think because of that, there's a ripple effect. There's a ripple effect. Peaks and quarrels. Brethren, the message is, which of you are the bigger man? the bigger man. The most rude that can turn your back, most indifferent to good manners, the one that won't even do things to when they see a problem coming, just walk away and nip it in its bud. Nope. Or the childishness that fans the flames and the irritation becomes an issue. So, who's the bigger man? The bigger man, I think, is somebody that we all recognize. He's living inside his own skin. He's content. So, you decide what your report card is on those issues. I think the reaction, you know, what to do. I wonder, I just want to ask your advice again about the shift in the measure of success. I don't quite understand how attendance is a measure of success in an order professing to be the source of moral development. Oh, I'd make a good man better. I think I can challenge challenge us all that that is the point. So that isn't something that happens because we show up in a room. I think it's we can expect that there's a little more. Excuse me. A little more to it. I know some of the boys get into something esoteric. You know, okay. You know, if you have to wear a headband and love beads, fine. It never killed anybody. But when we stopped and tried to understand what it is that was going on, it becomes a different kind of world, doesn't it? It doesn't make the world sinister or take away the fun, but it becomes what it is. We're starting to reflect on the seriousness of and the importance of the decisions that we make. There's ramifications and consequence. So we need thoughtful men to work on thoughtful solutions. Chasing people around, help me understand, other than annoying the people, the very people that we want to embrace, irritating them, how is that useful? Oh, and if it is useful, how come it's not working? How come the new boys aren't pouring out the doors? Yeah, we've got, you know, a lot of action going on. There is interest, but you know, are they showing up? I don't know. Again, the variability. Those that have got a program in mind do have a thoughtful, connected direction and leadership. They look at this and shrug their shoulders. And those that aren't tuned in are either not paying attention to the signs or they just don't register when they do see them. And I don't think we should be divisive in saying that group is larger and that's wrong and that's the problem, because no, it certainly isn't. I think what this does helps to define the size of the mountain that we're trying to climb. I think this mountain requires a team to get to the top. I don't want to get into that right now. We'll come back to that. But I think the way that we are going to accomplish this is probably going to take us 100, maybe 25 years to get it pull the brakes on the inertia of what the trends that have been happening for so long. During that period, I think we need to be able to basically keep the faith. Sounds funny, doesn't it? Keep the faith. Keep focus, because we're in for some of our numbers are going to be challenging. For those that don't see these things as as tectonic movement of an order. They're expecting quick political fixes. You know, we do a program and we should, you know, measure it in 6 months and see its effect. Man, really? That's it? No, some of this takes a while. 1 and 2 year projects, even for a grandmaster, I think we're asking far, far too much of the man. Our order was built in decades and centuries. Where are the projects? Where are the targets and aims that will take decades and centuries to achieve? We are planting seeds of oak under which people that are going to benefit from our ideas will sit. Paraphrasing the effervescent Raymond Daniels, of course, Grandmaster. He was pointing out that I think for me, what comes ahead is I can put down the tools of my labor and enjoy, savor, not the despair that the project is incomplete, but that I had a part to play to contribute in the development of a great idea. Oh, gee, we failed. Oh, gee, come on, kid. That's only we fail if our ideas are small, that we're impertinent, impatient, or unprepared. We are launching ourselves here in this discussion today, reminding ourselves that the projects are large. The trends within masonry are decades and centuries in the development and the resolution, the evolution, not so much resolution, the evolution. And so we are this pool of knowledge that we're floating on is vast. And we are like that small cork. The surface is not always flat and calm. There are turbulence around us, dynamic forces that influence as they always have and always will. I'm not talking about formalized religion, because I think fit this conversation into the earlier discussions that we got into about celebrity and character. Character, development of character. It's not that the hundreds of years ago was better. The focus was different. The focus was different. Now, in the next 20, 25, and 50 years, the focus will be different again than it is today. The lifestyle that we have is far too expensive to continue. We gobble up resources far disproportionate to our numbers. Now, oh my goodness, is this a cultural challenge? Hell no. It's life. It's life. So, you know, we can't sustain this, but it wasn't that this was a bad idea. We had to give it a shot and take a look at it. No, it will evolve. It will evolve into something else. The evolution now, our Chinese brethren are looking at the remedy of water pollution. And you and I know that ancient culture will fix it. They will. They're not going to become mini us's because we are doing a lot of damage. Oh, we can say as long as we can justify it, yeah. But that's the politics. That's the clamor for power. And the politicians around us need the power in order to do something, to make something significant in their minds and in their beliefs happen. It's kind of interesting that we're having this topic. It's been the death of recent death of a very notable British Prime Minister. It's funny to sort of water down a person's impact as good or bad. It seems quite untimely. I don't know yet. I really don't know. You know, I'll have a better sense of that, you know, maybe 50 years from now. I certainly hope, you know, I'm hopeful. But I wanted to at least challenge you and ask for your opinion, your ideas, your advice on these things. Chasing people around, what's that say about the value of our and the nobility of our craft? That's what we are, you know, what are we, hucksters? Shills trying to sell a product? My goodness. Is that what we've become? What makes us different? In a world where everybody wants to be different and unique, is to be what we are. But to do that, we have to study and we have to get it together. Or we're only a shadow of that potential. That's why I need your successes, your ideas, the benefit of your character development. Truly. By example, I think that's probably one of the most wise things I've ever heard come out of Freemasonry. Do you mind if I get into a little bit of Wilmshurst? Yeah, I know I skipped over last week. I skipped over Pike, but bear with me. I have a need, I guess, an appetite for right now for this. Again, this is the pâté of Masonic education. You take little bits of it, savor it. This is the 18-year McCallum. Savor it. It's the experience of this, not how quickly. Any of you, if you fellows out there think you have to absorb all of this, well, there's no race. It's a life. As the admission of every candidate into a lodge presupposes his prior existence in the world without the lodge, so our doctrine presupposes that every soul born into this world has lived in and has come hither from an anterior state of life, something else. It has lived elsewhere before it entered this world. It will live elsewhere when it passes. Hence, human life being but a parenthesis in the midst of eternity. Interesting old guy, this Wilmshurst. But upon entering this world, the soul must needs assume material form. In other words, it takes upon itself a physical body to enable it to enter into relations with the physical world and to perform the functions appropriate to it in this particular phase of its career. Interesting. Need I say that the physical form with which we have all been invested by the Creator upon our entrance into this world, and of which we shall all divest ourselves when we leave the lodge of this life, is represented among us by our Masonic apron? Really? Who knew? Who knew? Who knew? This, our body of mortality, this veil of flesh and blood clothing the inner soul for us This is the real badge of innocence, the common bond of friendship with which the great architect has been pleased to invest us all. This, the human body, is the badge which is older and nobler than that of any other order in existence. And though it be but a body of humiliation compared with that body of incorruption which is the promised inheritance of him who endures to the end, let us never forget that if we never do anything to disgrace the badge of flesh with which God has endowed each of us, that badge will never disgrace us. Well, Wilmshurst certainly separates the brain from the buffoon, yeah? Huh. My, oh my. Again, we are the vehicle. We are the vessel. I've thought that the inside of a Masonic lodge represents our mind. The mind, the human mind, full of information that we need to, you know, work through to understand. It's an interesting phenomena. So, what do we have on the go? Brethren, I charge you to regard your apron as one of the most precious and speaking symbols our order has to give you. Remember that when you first wore it, it was a piece of pure white lambskin, an emblem of that purity and innocence which we always associate with the lamb and with the newborn child. Remember that you first wore it with the flap raised, it being thus a five-cornered badge. We've changed that, haven't we? We've changed that. Wonder why. That's completely lost to us today. Completely. How fascinating. How fascinating. Remember that the flap was raised up, by means of which we enter into relations with the material world around us, our five points of fellowship with the material world, but indicating also by the triangular portion above in conjunction with the quadrangular portion below that man's nature is a combination of soul and body. The three-sided emblem at the top added to the four-sided emblem beneath, making seven, the perfect number. For as it is written in an ancient Hebrew doctrine with which Masonry is closely allied, God blessed and loved the number seven more than all things under his throne, by which is meant that man, the sevenfold being, is the most cherished of all the Creator's works. And hence also it is that the lodge has seven principal officers, and that a lodge to be perfect requires the presence of seven brethren. Though the deeper meaning of this phrase is that the individual man, in virtue of his sevenfold constitution, in himself constitutes the perfect lodge. If he will but know himself and analyze his own nature aright. Too much? Gone too far? Make up your own mind. Draw what you need from these ideas. Pull a thread of meaning from it. There's a lot to take in. Be contemplative about this. Come back and listen to it again. Think about it again and again. This isn't something that we necessarily... The penny may drop for you. It's not necessarily a formula approach to learning. It's the understanding of what this is that teaches when you're receptive. We would hope that your preparation for a lodge is preparation for a spiritual event. I know that that's not always the case. I don't know how to have a spiritual connection easily unless it's can be done without being feeling self-conscious. That it's a natural part of every Masonic gathering. And I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Because we're not communicating and talking. Not as much as I think an order needs to. And we're shy away from disagreement. And we shy away from it. We need to be able to address this this study. I think when we come to our a lodge as a student of the art and science, then we can sit back and be observers of some of the trivia, some of the unessential things that are going on around us. And if we're not drawn into them and we're drawn to one another, then perhaps we serve a useful purpose. Perhaps by example, we teach that there is an alternative to, but it's unpopular, you know. Everybody is expecting, you know, glad handing. And I think that needs to be there. But truly, we're taught that this is to be in moderation and within limits. And I don't know what that is. After the end of a day, when I'm exhausted, my sense of having a good time is just somebody to give me a warm greeting and let me sit back. I don't want to have my time wasted, just like you don't. I wish sometimes that when somebody launches themselves into a sincere bit of education or information, that they had first asked, not me, but had some direction from the lodge, so that they knew that the ideas were more than self-serving. I'm sorry, out of the mind of one. I think education and this kind of information always takes on a greater depth when it's answering the question. Other than that, it's just data floating around. I hear about bits and pieces of Masonic history with no connections. Like, yeah, okay, I don't. That's nice. I just need the context. The better speakers seem to that we hear always seem to put the context out there first. This is what I'm going to talk to you about. This is where it fits into the lexicon, the Masonic lexicon. And this is why I'm bringing it to you. So I think we need to be able to bring the question up. And if we have a collective question, even better, then we all sit waiting for the answer. Is I think the collective question often now is, will you inform me? Will we be entertained? Will this be a waste of time? Will something meaningful occur at the end? I don't think those are necessarily frivolous questions. I'm sorry, I have the same limits as everybody else. So, to each of us is also from our birth been given three lesser lights, by which the lodge within ourselves may be illumined. I love that word, illumined. For the sun symbolizes our spiritual consciousness, the higher aspirations and emotions of the soul. Well, the great creator is really kicking it today. It is absolutely inspiring. It's that little half-light between the frost and mist of an early morning and the potential for a wonderfully bright, warm sky with some nice cold temperatures. Lovely. For the sun symbolizes our spiritual consciousness, the higher aspirations and emotions of the soul. The moon betokens our reasoning or intellectual faculties, remind me to do a show on the tarot card. Speaking of the moon, I cleansed a deck of tarot card under the moon about a year ago. It happened to be, anyway, I digress. We'll come back to that. Fascinating. And yes, there is a Masonic connection in history, in case you're wondering. Rider-Waite. Go and check that one out. The moon betokens our reasoning or intellectual faculties, which, as the moon reflects the light of the sun, should reflect the light coming from the higher spiritual faculty and transmit it into our daily conduct. Whilst the master of the lodge is a symbolical phrase denoting the willpower of man, which should enable him to be master of his own life, to control his own actions and keep down the impulses of his lower nature, even as the stroke of the master's gavel controls the lodge and calls to order and obedience the brethren under his direction. By the assistance of these lesser lights within us, a man is enabled to perceive what is, again symbolically called the form of the lodge, the way in which his own human nature has been composed and constituted, the length and breadth and height and depth of his own being. By their help, too, he will perceive that he himself, his body, and his soul are holy ground, upon which he should build the altar of his own spiritual life, an altar which he should suffer no iron tool, no debasing habit of thought or conduct to defile. The iron tool is the debasing habit of thought or conduct. I would add probably misogyny, homophobia, temper, intemperance. I would add that. The Scottish Rite has a wonderful degree that illustrates this. I wish I could share the experience, those of you who have been through it, where you have a family that has a responsibility to protect a sacred fire, and through various processes, the sacred flame is extinguished. And by them, the altar of your own spiritual life, he will perceive how wisdom, strength, and beauty have been employed by the Creator, like three grand supporting pillars in the structure of his own organism. We are the temple. And by these, finally, he will discern how that there is a mystical ladder of many rounds or staves. That, in other words, there are innumerable paths or methods by means of which men are led upwards to the spiritual light encircling all of us, and in which we live and move and have our being. But that of the three principal methods, the greatest of these, the one that comprehends them all and brings us nearest heaven, is love. Oh, well, that's enough to creep any man my age out. Oh, yes. Remember, as I go on here, I didn't know that we were supposed to giggle. Remember when you were a little kid, you didn't know you were supposed to giggle when you heard something that sounded like, talking about girls' round bits, and we all would giggle subconsciously. I never knew where that came from. It's like, must have to do it. I want to be part of the crew. I'm going to stop doing that. There are a number of paths to enlightenment, is what we're being taught here. Love, in the full exercise of which godlike virtue, a Mason reaches the summit of his profession. We are talking about agape. We're talking about the respect for life, the love for life, not sexualized love, Freud wasn't talking about sexualized love, or loved in the sexualized version. We're talking about love of all life, the Dalai Lama love, the Krishna celebration of life around, the complete joy, and being able to express that. Oh, nobody told us in the day. Saffron robes, dancing and singing. Just bizarre. Nobody ever took the time to tell us that these are people that truly believed. So we criticize somebody else's magical thinking while we purport to have the right magical thinking that helps us to understand our connection with the Creator. Really, it's love. That's how we reach the summit. That summit being God Himself, whose name is love. Well, or the ineffable name. So, that's something we find within ourselves. Don't you hate it when you can't just continue to lie to yourself? Or find some trumped up justification to promote yourself at the expense of other people. It's wonderful, isn't it? When you wake up, wonder why it was that when often great men meet their sense of mortality, oh my goodness, that they begin to realize the importance, realize what they've done and what they are. I always like it when I meet people that are trying to make up and trying to make amends. I think that's wonderful. The atonement, I don't know if it works for them, it works. It makes the world a better place. The fellow who has made a mistake and is committing acts of very contrite, but is going about his business, conducting his life in a world that is unyielding and unforgiving. And yeah, that's the task that he has faced. That's his challenge. Just like you and I have challenges every day of the life of our lives because of who we are. I cannot too strongly impress upon you, says Wilmshurst, and he calls us brethren here, the fact that throughout our rituals and our lectures, the references made to the lodge are not to the building in which we meet. That building itself is intended to be but a symbol, a veil of allegory concealing something else. Know ye not, says the great initiate, St. Paul, that ye are the temples of the Most High and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? All the faiths. What's wrong with the one that feels that the Creator is so sacred and so beyond the comprehension of mankind that the Creator should never be portrayed? The portrayal is, in fact, a blasphemy. What's wrong with that faith? That's the way that group of people worship, and they haven't necessarily learned that they are in a neighborhood of faiths, perhaps. But a lot of those folks, we only hear about the radical elements, just like, every good thing. There's probably radicals amongst us that just sort of are just out there using and abusing under the name of whatever we find good in the world. But thoughtful men, good men, need to be able to pull back and recognize the world is not defined by these radical fringe element operators. It's defined by men trying to get by, doing the best they can, creating some safety for their parents and for their children or for their wives, having enough food to eat, living safely. Our attitudes change. Do you know, there's a lot of things going on right now in Russia. Russians are dying off. What a noble... I'm still reading about Catherine and Potemkin. I'll tell you about the Empress Catherine. Just a fascinating bit of history. And also how there was a lot of slagging that went on. You know, and who did it and why begins to make a lot more sense. Sadly. It's a sad commentary about the pettiness of the courtiers, but there's a lot about the history. Russia is so unique and fascinating, and it's suffering right now. It's drinking itself to death in a large part, at least the material that I'm hearing about. It's dying off. Population is dying off. It's aged and it's dying off. And there is a sense of despair. A lot of the communities since 91, it's, what is it, 20,000 small villages have disappeared and no longer inhabited, or they have like 10 people living in them. And what goes on is, it's complicated. It's easy, simple for us to sit in a position of comfort and start broadcasting advice. We're not there. Oh, let's just ethnocentrically erase their complete history and say that, well, it's simple. People of our history have answers, so just do what we say. Think the way we think. Boys, how we get there differs. We just hear that in Wilmhurst's work. History is different. History gives a different understanding. The history of Persia, the history of China, the history of Russia, the history of Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. Huh? It's different. The Gauls, the Franks, the Celts. How we get to where we are depends on where we've been. So we're not all at the same stage as nations, as cultures. Certainly we aren't. Here's in Canada, fabulous country, empty, but fabulous. We have so much to give, and I still think that, you know, an affinity for the land is what starts to define us as Canadian. That, and being a Leafs fan. I know, sorry. Or is that enjoying good beer, or not taking ourselves so seriously that we can't laugh at ourselves, or being concerned enough that we want to create a world, that a country where the common good is important to us, and even if it causes us a bit of back pain sometimes, you know, we want to make sure that the Canadians, and whether they have a nickel in their pocket, get the kind of care that they deserve. That, I think, is respect and honoring people. That's different for us. But did you know Joseph Stalin was Time Magazine's Person of the Year twice? 1939 and 1942. History goes on, and there are what we understand, our place in history changes. We see quite a different kind of history, a legacy of this fellow today. The three most common PIN number combinations, are you ready for this? Get them written down, are 1234, 1111, and 0000. They account for 18.6% of all PINs used, despite there being 10,000 possible four-digit combinations of 0 to 9. 1234. Oh, gee, we're so clever, aren't we? And then we worry about cyber attacks. Get over it. Your little nitwits attack us. We'll get our little nitwits, our brainiacs, to go and attack you. But now they're fooling around with, missile launch systems and communication systems for landing aircraft. And it's like, come on, cut it out, you nitwits. Now we have to go and find them and, you know, take away their headphones and get them out into the light. maybe give them a good thrashing. Some words that Brits regard as the British regard as typically American include candy, the fall, the diaper. Were originally British, but dropped out of use in Britain between around 1850 and the early 1900s. Who knew? Watches in watch adverts almost always show the time as 10 past 10. It's an industry standard that gives the watch a pleasing, aesthetic, happy face. In Thailand, to indicate laughter in an online communication, speakers often write 555 instead of ha 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 ha. There you go. You didn't know that. So if you're, you know, texting in Thailand. Britain has invaded all but 22 countries in the world, although the current names and borders of those countries may not have applied at the time they were invaded. The lifespan of an animal is approximately equal to 1.5 billion heartbeats. Gee, that came out of Discover Magazine, the 1st of September. 1.5 billion heartbeats. So my heart always beats better when I'm having too much fun. Maybe I should slow down. 1.5, fast or slow. There you go. There are at least 800 distinct languages in Papua New Guinea, representing around 15% of the world's total. Paths. Paths, how we get where we are. Let's not assume that everybody has the same history and that the solutions for one are the solutions that work for all. They're algorithms. The boys have to do the calculations to get from where they were to where they want to go. And for us to say that what we have is, you know, if everybody just brackets us and says that's Western world, well, you know, my back goes up a little bit, you know. I'm not like our neighbor to the south. You know, I think differently and act differently and talk differently. Amen. And the fact that I like Quebec and I love the Maritimes, I like the extent of the country, and I like the freedom to be a Mason here in Canada. I think that we're respectful of faith and respectful of the Creator and respectful of country. We're law-abiding. And we try to do good deeds. Where, whatever the criticism, we didn't ever try it. Making an effort. So we might not get it right, but we'll come back at it and keep at it until we do. Here he says, the building. Olmhurst is saying that the building is us. And he brings in St. Paul to help build his case. I don't think you needed to, but thanks, thanks, Walter. The real lodge referred to in our rituals is in our own individual personalities. And if we interpret our doctrine in the light of this fact, we shall find that it reveals an entirely new aspect of the purpose of our craft. It is after investment that the apron, with the apron, that the initiate is placed in the northeast corner. Thereby, he is intended to learn that at his birth into this world, the foundation stone of his spiritual life was duly and truly laid and implanted within himself. And he is charged to develop it, to create a superstructure upon it. Two paths are open to him at this stage, a path of light and a path of darkness. A path of good and a path of evil. Now, just let me. What if you don't see the world as good and evil, but is what is? Sorry. Wally and I are disagreeing again. But the northeast corner is the symbolical dividing place between the two. All right, let me say between thoughtless and thoughtful. I can accept that. In symbolical language, north always seemed to devise the place of imperfection and undevelopment. In olden times, the bodies of suicides, reprobates, and unbaptized children were always buried in the north or sunless side of a churchyard. The seat of the junior members of the craft is allotted in the north, for symbolically it represents the condition of the spiritually enlightened man. The novice, in whom the spiritual light latent within him has not yet risen above the horizon of consciousness and dispersed the clouds of material interests and the impulses of the lower and merely sensual life. Lowly and merely. Oh, I'm hungry. Oh, I'm cold. Oh, I want companionship. Lowly and merely sensual life. The initiate placed in the northeast angle is intended to see then that in on the one side of him is the path that leads to the perpetual light of the east, into which he is encouraged to proceed, and that on the other is that of spiritual obscurity and ignorance into which it is possible for him to remain or relapse. The starting point then is that we're in spiritual obscurity and ignorance. And unless there's some kind of spiritual guidance, we couldn't possibly find our way out. How do we teach this? Let me come back to this next week, okay? It is a parable of the dual paths of life open to each one of us. On the one hand, the path of selfishness, material desires, and sensual indulgence, of intellectual blindness and moral stagnation. On the other, the path of moral and spiritual progress, and pursuing which one may decorate and adorn the lodge within him with the ornaments and jewels of grace, and with the invaluable furniture of true knowledge, and which he may dedicate in all his actions to the service of God and his fellow man. There we go. I hope, catch your breath. Doesn't all come, it just doesn't all flow, does it? Doesn't all flow. This is what we can talk about in terms of esoteric Freemasonry. It's not a steady diet, I don't think. I would think that if we had a cloister where you could come deliberately, once in a while, when it was suitable to you, and in that place, you would meet with Masons, like-minded, at that point where they want to have esoteric discussion, discuss the enigma, the deeper symbolism. Garnet Schneck has made a wonderful, from Bracebridge, has made a wonderful, wonderful effort in training and orientation around symbolism. And I would recommend, if you've not looked into the course, but it's just really, really nicely done. Take that work. And what I'm saying now here about is taking that work into an educational depth. He has done a great job. That helps to orient. It's like, you know, you need that. We need that. You know, he's given us the entry. He's given us a lot of the tools. It's up to us to refine. So, what about if we had a place where we could talk? But we shouldn't assume. I think it's improper. If I was to assume that this is a cool kind of a topic for a meeting and just surprise you with it, I think that would be wrong-minded of me. It would be at least insensitive of you. And if I'm scared off by it, which I probably am these days, because this is an aspect that we have let fall under, it's really dusty and it's been neglected. You know, I don't think there's very much even tolerance for some of these discussions anymore. So to change that, 25 years, that's what I would think is reasonable. And in the meantime, what should we expect? The same. But with perhaps a little bit of an addition. That the difference being that we can create those opportunities where we like-minded fellows that want to talk about and listen and discuss these types of ideas can come together. Huh. You know, I'm almost inclined to think that I would like to design a workshop for this type of thing. Maybe I need the help of some of my Jewish friends to design it around the idea of shula, you know, school where a rabbi is teaching, where you would come in pairs and attend, and the lessons would be given out. And we would do this as a group, not for everybody, not as participants and observers. Everybody participates. But I think that's something that I'll wait to see if we get much of a response before I would do that. But I think this type of topic needs to be only offered, this kind of conversation, only to people that are receptive. You know, that when that window of learning opens, then you teach. Other than that, we can't force teaching. We can bore a class. We can certainly do that. I think I would suggest that a couple of things we want to try and stop using: guilt. Guilt does not work. It is not a motivator. Authority is not a motivator. You must be here or you're showing a lack of character and support for their blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. It's not working, is it? Keep doing it, though. Keep doing it. It's just not working. Anyway, I'd say this is clear-eyed to anybody, and I have done, that our order contains some of the most fascinating ideas, the most fascinating ideas that history can produce. The fact that you and I are often unaware that we haven't studied is our own shortcoming. That's nothing to do with the greatness of the Free Masonic Order. Controversies aside, there's a gentleness that comes when somebody is confident in their knowledge. There's a lot, there's so much offered that is complete bunk. Ugh. So when you find something that starts to join the dots in your thinking, it's when the material has meaning to you. And I'll give you a leg up on that. When you're finding something that seems to have some meaning, as I think Masons require, I always would suggest to think about what that meaning says to you. What does it say to you? Those discussions happen between good friends, where people can trust one another, where they can identify with common goals. And I think there's far more of that just under the surface in Freemasonry than we would come to know. Be almost invisible by personality and promote ourselves as students of the craft at various stages of imperfection. It tends to be more of what we are. Do you mind a little blurb on... I spoke a little bit about ethics last week, didn't I? Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk just a little bit about what will I talk about? Not epistemology. Let's talk about absolutism, maybe. Yeah, we can do that. That's always fun. Again, keep it in your hip pocket. try and work it into a conversation. You see how quickly you can clear a room. Dimitri says, I've been thinking about your question. What does good mean? And I've got the answer. Good is acting on a just principle. Tasso says, by Zeus, Dimitri, you're full of surprises. You're starting to sound like a real philosopher. Just one last question. how do you determine just principles? Just like everybody else, I learned them from my mom. Tasso says, why does Socrates get all the A students? Absolutist ethics or divine law makes a simple business of ethics. If God says it's wrong, it is wrong, wholly and absolutely. That's all she wrote. But there are complications. The first is how we can be sure what God really thinks. Fundamentalists have that one covered. Scripture says so. But how did the people in Scripture know the signals they were getting were really from God? Abraham thought he was called by God to sacrifice his son on the altar. Abraham figures, if God says so, I'd better do it. Our first philosophical query to Abraham is, what are you, nuts? You hear God tell you to do a crazy thing and you don't even ask for identification? Another problem with following divine law is interpretation. What exactly qualifies as honoring thy father and mother? A Mother's Day card? Marrying the boring son of the family dentist as thy honorable mother and father want you to do? These questions don't feel like Talmudic hair splitting when the dentist's son is 4'11" and weighs 270 pounds. A prime characteristic of divine law is that God always has the last word. Moses trudges down from Mount Sinai, tablets in hand, and announces to the assembled multitudes, I've got good news and I've got bad news. The good news is I got him down to 10. The bad news is adultery is still in. A young and lusty St. Augustine apparently attempted a similar negotiation when he famously cried out, Lord, grant me chastity, but not now. Clearly, Augustine was trying a little Talmudic hair-splitting himself. I mean, you didn't say exactly when not to commit adultery, did you? It does sound like a joke. Think about it. These are not simple. Oh, make it simple. Make it simple. The last show, we talked about different forms of ethics. And some of those forms challenged it. Certainly, they challenged me. It's not exactly what I would have thought, but it helps us going through that list to identify ourselves. And then once we do, we can start to consider whether that's the way we want to be seen and the way we want to affect the world around us. Absolutist terms tend to make me run. I just run faster as I get older, I guess. Let's talk a bit about Platonic virtue. You've all heard about Plato and the Republic. One of the most thought-provoking and defining bits of work of philosophy. It's fascinating and it's full of surprises, like stuff that you have heard. In his magnum opus, The Republic, Plato wrote, the state is the soul writ large. So to discuss the virtues of the individual, he wrote a dialogue about the virtues of the ideal state. He called the rulers of this state philosopher kings, which may account for Plato's popularity with philosophers. The philosopher kings guide the state as reason guides the human soul. The prime virtue of both the philosopher kings and reason is wisdom, which Plato defined as understanding the idea of the good. However, one man's good is another man's goodies. At a meeting of the college faculty, an angel suddenly appeared and tells the head of the philosophy department, I will grant you whichever of three blessings you choose, wisdom, beauty, or $10 million. Immediately, the professor chooses wisdom. There is a flash of lightning and the professor appears transformed, but he just sits there staring down at the table. One of his colleagues whispers, say something. The professor says, I should have taken the money. Now that's good. Now that's funny. Come on. Remember the Stoics, the Epicureans. We'll talk about that again. Here we are. You men with an interest in moral development. The ethical question, this is Stoicism, the ethical question that concerns the Stoics in the 4th century BC was how to react to the prevailing sense of fatalism that came from living in a tightly controlled empire. They could not change much of anything in their daily lives, so they decided to change their attitude toward life itself. It was the only personal control they had left. What the Stoics came up with was a strategy of emotional disengagement from life. They called their attitude apatheia, or as we know it, apathy. And for the Stoics, apathy was a virtue, which made them a barrel of laughs at the local taberna. The Stoics were willing to sacrifice some kind of happiness, sex, drugs, and Dionysian hip-hop, in order to avoid the unhappiness brought on by their passions. STDs, hangovers, and bad rhymes. They acted only for reason, never from passion, and therefore considered themselves the only truly happy people. Which is to say, they were unhappy. They were un-unhappy. The following story demonstrates a modern form of Stoicism. Stoicism by proxy. The Coopers were shown into the dentist's office, where Mr. Cooper made it clear he was in a big hurry. No fancy stuff, doctor. No gas or needles or any of that stuff. Just pull the tooth and get it over. I wish more of my patients were as stoic as you, said the dentist admiringly. Now, which tooth is it? Mr. Cooper turned to his wife and said, open your mouth, honey. Ah. It is a hidden meaning, yeah. G.K. Chesterton once wrote, the word good has many meanings. For example, if a man were to shoot his mother at a range of 500 yards, I should call him a good shot, but not necessarily a good man. It's the qualifier necessarily that shows Chesterton possessed a truly philosophical mind. So we're coming to the end of the show here. It's been, my goodness, seems to have gone past rather quickly. I'll talk next time about utilitarianism again, if you don't mind. That's the stuff of Vladimir Lenin. You know, that'll send all the faint of heart running to the exits. I think we are of the age of communication. And we will replace some of our archaic and outdated forms of communication with some new forms. But our capacity to maintain the freshness of Freemasonry is not something, the capacity is not something that we can tinker with. It is what it is. And the sooner we get over that thinking that we have to preserve and protect, the sooner we'll be able to move on with embracing the deeper meaning of Freemasonry. We could no more take away or remove the sense of importance of Freemasonry than we could, you know, use magic to solve all of the riddles of the world. The human mind, the personality, the character, the history, the diversion of interest is hard to fathom. We are learning new ways of communicating. We are learning how the human mind works. It's to say that we have advantages today that the ancients didn't have, but it's really quite important, I would think, to use these tools. The fear is when we start to overcome our continued presence, the legacy that was handed to us, and try to preserve something that exists in our mind and do it in a way that is suitable to men of our era, trying to apply ourselves and approximate the thinking of people from the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries, I think it dooms us. We are what we are. 150 years from now, we will be part of that ongoing history of Freemasonry. The sooner we see that, the better off we are. We're here for a very short time. Our squabbles, the temperament, is short-lived. It vanishes. And what we have is the words that linger in the air. They can't be pulled back when they're said in haste. Brethren, try not to be so rash. Try to be thoughtful with yourself. Expect and exhibit patience by extending it to people around you, including me. You've made Masonic Home Companion a very successful venture. I never thought that we would be 3 years in and going on. But there you have it. The response, tell your friends. If you think this has some merit, tell somebody else. See if they might like it too. It's been an absolute pleasure. I think spring is coming. Solstice is coming. Seasons are changing. Life goes on. Life is good. You commit to acts of random Masonic kindness. And what's the new word? People are picking up on some of our ideas, boys. Pay forward, they call it now. I love that. Well, we know where that came from. Do you think that maybe some of our ideas are having an effect on the world around us? I would only hope and pray for that day. Some of it's happening around us. Keep up the good work. See you soon.